remember the thugs.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, next, please welcome up to the stage Puma Pearl, who will read something by Lenore Kendell.
Lenore Kendell, a believer in holy eroticism that got her book Spans, and this is called To Fuck With Love, Phase 3. To fuck with love, to love with all the heat and wild of fuck, the fever of your mouth devouring all my secrets and my alibis, leaving me pure, burned into oblivion, the sweetness, unendurable, mouth, barely touching mouth, nipple to nipple, we touched and were transfixed by a flow of energy beyond anything I have ever known. We touched. And 2 days later, my hand embracing your semen dripping cock again, the energy indescribable, almost unendurable. The barrier of noumenon, phenomenon transcended, the circle momentarily complete, the balance of forces perfect, flying together, our bodies slipping into love that never have slipped out. I kiss your shoulder and it reeks of lust, the lust of erotic angels fucking the stars and shouting their insatiable joy over heaven. The lust of comets colliding in celestial hysteria, the lust of hermaphrodite deities doing inconceivable things to each other and screaming delight over the entire universe and beyond. And we lie together, our bodies wet and burning, and we weep, we weep, we weep the incredible tears that saints and holy men shed in the presence of their own incandescent gods. I have whispered love into every orifice of your body, as you have done to me. My whole body is turning into a cunt mouth, my toes, my hands, my belly, my breast, my shoulder, my eyes. You fuck me continually with your tongue, your look, with your words, with your presence. We are transmuting. We are as soft and warm and trembling as a new gold butterfly. The energy, indescribable, almost unendurable. At night, sometimes I see our bodies glow. Okay. And I have gotten banned for my cynical eroticism, so this is mine. The miracle of apricots. I stared at his head. It looked perfectly round and smooth, like my stepfather's bowling ball. He watched himself. My name didn't matter. He could have been on top of anyone. I was bored. My leg began to cramp. I whispered to him, "It's your pussy." He was interested. "You own that pussy," I continued. "I own that pussy," he repeated excitedly, muscles tightening, eyes unfocused, forehead clenched. "I own that pussy," he yelled frantically and flopped around a few times, finally came, hollering something about, "Here it is," as if a miracle were occurring. His liquid spilling Jesus or Jehovah or apricots. His smell remained after he left. I lit coconut candles, removed the stained, ruined black sheets, and laid in the bathtub, wondering exactly why I had wanted him to stay.
Thank you, Puma. And now, for something completely different, Bob Heeman will read to us Kenneth Patchen.
You should know who Kenneth Patchen is, but if you don't, because more and more he's becoming invisible, he's ignored, he's no longer anthologized. Back in the 50s, 60s, he was in every anthology. He's about a half a generation before the Beats. He definitely influenced the Beats. Most of them met with him. You know, if they were going to be where he was, they would meet with him and talk with him. He had spinal problems, which meant a lot of his life he was an invalid. He read poetry with jazz in the 50s, including Charlie Mingus. There's a cassette out, a CD, you can tell my age, a CD out, came out a couple of years ago with Ferlinghetti and Patchen reading independently with jazz. He was one of the only people in America in the 40s in touch with the international avant-garde. His novel, Sleepers Awake, there are sections that anticipate concrete poetry. And Ferlinghetti published him twice in the Pocket Poet series, which is sort of a landmark of all the Beats, even though Patchen wasn't a Beat. The first two pieces I'm going to read are from First Will and Testament, and they have a format where there's a paragraph and then the poem, there's no title. And what with the blunders, what with the real humor of the address, the end is sure to be attained, that of Rora's fund in the roused hamlet, or mountain village which pours forth its whole population in a swarm round the amorous orator, down to the baby that can but just toddle and the curs that join in the clamor, mad with the ecstasy at the novelty of some noise besides that of trees and the horrible clamor of the grass. We talked of things, but all the time we wanted each other. And finally we were silent and I knelt above your body. A closing of eyes and falling unfalteringly over a warm, pure country and something crying. When I was a child, things being hurt made me sorry for them, but it seemed the way men and women did, and we had not made the world come into it crying. I wanted so not to hurt you, and going out of it like a sudden pouring of salt. Later, being tired and overflowing with tenderness, girl's body to boy's body lying there and wondering what it had been. We got to our feet very quietly so that they would not waken, but we felt their shy, sorrowful look on us as we left them alone there. All things are one thing to the earth, rayless as a blind leper, Blake lies with every man. And the fat lord sleeps beside his bastard at last. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't mean what we think it does. For we too will never lie there. We shall not be there when death reaches out his sparkling hands. There are so many little dyings that it doesn't matter which of them is death. And this is a second poem of his, also from the book, First Will and Testament. She had concealed him in a deep, dark cave, hewn far in the rock to which she alone knew the entrance on the world. And so treacherous and uncertain was the descent that the lawgivers and the villagers passed over his head in the clear fields above, content to allow him such safety as he had. Going to bed, when we have done lying quietly together in the dark, warm houses stand within us, sleepy angels smile in doorways, little jeweled horses jolt by without sound. Everyone is rich and no one has money. I can love you, thank God I can love you. All that can happen to us is not known to the guns. Are you awake, darling? Do not fall asleep yet. To sleep now would seem a way to die so easily, and death is something which poems must be about. But the way our bodies were wings, flying in and out of each other. One final one by Patchen, I'm not going to read anything of mine. This is from his book, Cloth of the Tempest, which appeared in 1944. The murder of two men by a young kid wearing lemon-colored gloves. Wait. 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 Wait, wait. 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 Now. Thank you.
Sorry, I was involved in some business at the back. Our next reader will be Evie Ivy. And Evie, you'll have to tell them because I didn't bring the program with me. So you tell them what you're reading, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gordon. I've been enjoying the reading much so far. I've enjoyed reading this poet very much because I don't travel much, so I enjoy travel poetry and poetry that takes me places. And certainly when I started to read this poet, I found myself out west. He's got a slew of Western-oriented poems, and when I was reading them, I thought of Li Po. And then reading on, he had actually traveled the Far East, and that he had studied Buddhist life and thought. So I said, my goodness, no wonder. So I'm very happy to read four very short poems by Gary Snyder, San Francisco poet. And the first one is called Work to Do Toward Town. Work to do toward town. And let me put on my glasses because, you know, you get there and what can you do? And I never thought I'd need reading glasses. I used to thread needles for my mother and whatnot. And well, what can we do? Okay, work to do toward town. Venus glows in the east. Mars hangs in the twins. Frost on the logs and bare ground, free of house or tree. Kites come down from the mountains and glide quavering over the rooftops. Frost melts in the sun. A low haze hangs on the houses, firewood smoke and mist slanting far to the Kamo River and the distant Uji Hills. Farm women lead down carts loaded with long white radish. I pack my bike with books. All roads descend toward town. A spring night in Shokuku-ji. 8 years ago this May, we walked under cherry blossoms at night in an orchard in Oregon. All that I wanted then is forgotten now, but you. Here in the night, in a garden of the old capital, I feel the trembling ghost of Yugao. I remember your cool body, naked under a summer cotton dress. What I liked about this poem when I read it was that sometimes from our mouths comes our, you know, come our destiny. So, you know, we say things when we're young and then they kind of become prophetic one way or another. Hey for the horses. He had driven half the night from far down San Joaquin through Mariposa up the dangerous mountain roads and pulled in at 8 a.m. with his big truckload of hay behind the barn. With winch and ropes and hooks, we stacked the bales up clean to splintery redwood rafters. High in the dark, flecks of alfalfa whirling through shingle cracks of light. Itch of hay dust in the sweaty shirt and shoes. At lunchtime under black oak out in the hot corral, the old mare nosing lunch pails, grasshoppers crackling in the weeds. I'm 68, he said. I first bucked hay when I was 17. I thought that day I started, I sure would hate to do this all my life. And damn it, that's just what I've gone and done. And finally, how poetry comes to me. It comes blundering over the boulders at night. It stays frightened outside the range of my campfire. I go to meet it at the edge of the light. Gary Schneider, thank you.
And now a slight change in the program. We're going to welcome up Ronnie Norpell to read Harold Norris.
Every once in a while, the good managers switch the lineup around. Thank you for the courtesy. Hi, everybody. Here we are at another beat reading. I love it. Harold Norris, I am not a man. I am not a man. I can't earn a living, buy new things for my family. I have acne and a small Peter. I am not a man. I don't like football, boxing, and cars. I like to express my feelings. I even like to put my arm around my friend's shoulder. I am not a man. I won't play the role assigned to me. The role created by Madison Avenue, Playboy, Hollywood, and Oliver Cromwell. Television does not dictate my behavior. I am not a man. Once, when I shot a squirrel, I swore that I would never kill again. I gave up meat. The sight of blood makes me sick. I like flowers. I am not a man. I went to prison for resisting the draft. I do not fight when real men beat me up and call me queer. I dislike violence. I am not a man. I have never raped a woman. I don't hate blacks. I don't get emotional when the flag is waved. I do not think I should love America or leave it. I think I should laugh at it. I am not a man. I have never had the clap. I am not a man. Playboy is not my favorite magazine. I am not a man. I cry when I'm unhappy. I am not a man. I do not feel superior to women. I am not a man. I don't wear a jock strap. I am not a man. I write poetry. I am not a man. I meditate on peace and love. I am not a man. I don't want to destroy you. Okay, and as I've done the previous two readings that I've participated in here, I did an imitation of my own. And this is for Harold Norris. I am not a woman. I am not a woman. I can't cook dinner, turn new tricks for my old ex. I have BO and a large ego. I am not a woman. I don't like Oprah, Botox, and malls. I like to repress my feelings. I even like to misbehave around my nemesis, colder. I am not a woman. I won't play the role assigned to me, the role created by Madison Avenue, Playboy, Hollywood, or Gloria Steinem. HBO does not dictate my attitude. I am not a woman. Once when I got aborted, I swore that I would never fuck again. I gave up church. The sight of blood brings relief. I like freedom. I am not a woman. I went to college resisting the altar. I do not cry when fake men call me up and then turn queer. I dislike violets. I am not a woman. I have never tamed a man. I don't hate fags. I don't get emotional at weddings. I do not think I should love my dear boyfriend or leave him. I think I should shag with him. I am not a woman. I love taking a good crap. I am not a woman. O is not my favorite magazine. I am not a woman. I act up when I'm unhappy. I am not a woman. I do not feel inferior to men. I am not a woman. I wear vintage jerseys. I am not a woman. I write baseball books. I am not a woman. I meditate on penis and love. I am not a woman. I do not want to control you. Thank you very much.
But that leaves out so many men and women who like to be controlled. But next, tough act to follow, Bob, but Bob Quattrone, do your best. Come on up here. I should have said he's reading Bob LaGuardia.
Bob LaGuardia graduated from, actually was at Columbia College starting in 51. Ginsberg was there in 49. They had a friendship. It's never been accounted for by anybody. Ginsberg never allowed that to be accounted for. They had a reunion in the early 80s at Stevens. Ginsberg did a lot of talking in that reunion. Talked about each other, very revealing. Anyway, they were competitive with each other. Unknown fact. Ginsberg's real rival was Bob, not anybody else. Okay. I'm going to give you a poem called The Yugoslav Homer. Hope I can read this. It's about, Bob was a musician as well, and when he liked to write it historically about things, so it's actually putting a jazz band together, it was the metaphor, and he thought it was valid for Greek poetry, the Yugoslavs. Don't all of them have stories? I hope I can read this. Let's see. They never get around to telling? Sure they do. When I was a lad working in the Homeric trade, I was the boy who handed him the tune-pegged lyre. For where he says, just take the lyre up a peg. And that's how he twang the bow, twang. A new note, never before on earth, like Big Spiderbeck in a novel by Dorothy Baker. New to that evening at any rate, yep, and I used to do Swineherd Eumaeus, where it says, and then, oh, Swineherd Eumaeus, didn't you say to him, and I did. Because I had such a nice, deep voice. And I was a nice-looking young fella. Rare for a young man to have that deep voice. Got it from my dad, who used to do funerals for the locals when the Homerics couldn't come round. And worked with Homeros Egyptos for a while. My dad drank, you guessed that. We could have worked with anyone. Long, skinny, lean, tall fella like a cadaver. Built like the inside of his mind, he used to say. Admired him more than knew him, and not always that. But I got my grandfather's build on my mother's side, along with the voice. And the Yugoslav Homers took me right on. They were putting it together then, and went for the talent. Didn't care where you came from. And I did the ghosts of the suitors and Odysseus's mother in hell and the old man of the sea. I could touch you. It was a gift. The fellow who did Achilles, the old croat, always took Agamemnon for himself, was skinnier than I and freckle-faced and had whiteheads. He could cry and did a good lisp. Not much else to him. Oh, he had a sense of rhythm, I suppose, but he couldn't dance. Try to get through this. And he used to count out the lines, threesies, sixer, niner, fiver, sevenser in the rewrites. The old Yugoslavs rewrote in fours, mostly. But he never came to much of anything, and he hardly ever broke the beat, not like me. I could set up a double three and bounce an expletive off the head and break up the clauses six ways to Sunday. And at the end, there she'd be, six, double six, triple six. Row of threes, five or sevens or whatever. Perfect. I didn't give a damn in the fullness of my gift. But he really wanted to make it, this skinny weeper. But when the old Yugoslav went home to do tribals, better a religious sinecure than a Troy full of aesthetic sacrifices, he always said. And then he did it. They offered me the job. But I didn't trust the Yugoslav. I never thought fours had much of a chance, and I was right, and I never did tie on with the Homerics all the way. But this other fellow jumped at the chance, so they put out his eyes and bought him his rags and trained him. I coached him some myself, and he was pretty good by the end, even if he didn't have the voice. Now, he turned out to be the one fellow of the Yugoslavs who didn't work in fours, and some of his got in. Finally, Telemachus joining Odysseus and Penelope's hands in his. You remember that, where Telemachus says, "Now, Maw and Paw, by virtue of the authority invested in me, I hereby proclaim you man and wife." Good to have you aboard, Dad. Nice naturalness to that. Good country wit and something darker underneath. So anyhow, I know someone who got a line in, and that is a story I never will get around to telling. Why won't I? I don't know. Don't want to demean the gift. I just can't see my way clear. If he can't tell it the way it happened, why should I? Oh, I don't know. Maybe I can work it into one of these backcountry funerals or a wedding. You could set it in a talking seal. Talking seal does good to instruct a wife. Last few lines. Almost as good as a shake dance, and you can't do a shake dance around here. These people shake it themselves, and they won't sit still for an expert. Anyway, I have another story. The serving maids used to drive you crazy. They would tease the ass off you. You know, they were jealous, cause you got the good meat, and they were counting on it for leftovers. Then you got the leftovers too, and sometimes their morning breakfast, if you were any good. But anyhow, I got hold of one of them, and she said, "That stuff you do, that comes straight from the god, doesn't it?" And I said, "Oh, hell yes. Nowhere else to get it." And she said, "Do you talk with him often, the god?" And I said, "Oh, hell no, I don't do no talking. I just listen. He says it, and I remembers it. Sometimes I put in a word for somebody," I said, putting a word into her, you know. And she said, "There must be a hell of a vow of abstinence in that stuff." And I said, "Oh, it's a fearful chastity. But sometimes the god lets me off the hook." I said, "Sometimes it happens to me in a dream." And she said, "You know, you're the first young man who's come here in a spell." And I said, "You know, sometimes I talk in my sleep." And she said, "You do?" And I said, "The god tells me how to get out of places like this." And do you know what she did? She turned into a swallow and laughed at me from the branch of a tree. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. That's another poet now I have to go look up. Kim Kolesty is going to come up and give us a reading now. Welcome, Kim.
Thank you very much. It's always great to be here. It's such an array of talent, spectacle, the LES, and actually the West Side's really boring now. East Side in Manhattan is where it's at, LES. A poet from the 60s, still alive, and can be seen at any club and jazz club. In fact, he was just spotted on Sunday at Smoke. Black, Muslim, lives in Newark, and his name is? Anybody know?
Amir Baraka.
Yes, Amir Baraka. Okay. Thank you. It says that the poem that I'm reading is Way Out West. It's a poem from the preface to a 20-volume suicide note from 1961. In their references to Kerouac and Snyder, the poem suggests what Baraka has described as a sense of community growing among some of the young writers, and I was one of them as well, as the editor of one of their magazines. So, Way Out West, for Gary Snyder. As simple an act as opening the eyes, merely coming into things by degrees. Morning, some tears broken on the wooden stairs of my lady's eyes. Profusions of green, the leaves, their constant prehensions, like old junkies on Sheridan Square, eyes cold and round. There is a song Nat King Cole sings. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and stay right. The city and the intricate disorder of the seasons, unable to mention something as abstract as time. Even so, bowing low in the thick smoke from cheap incense, all kinds of questions filling the mouth till you suffocate and fall dead to opulent carpet. Even so, shadows will creep over your flesh and hide your disorder and your lies. There are unattractive wild ferns outside the window where the cats hide, the yowl from there at nights, in heat and bleeding on my tulips. Still bells like the evil unwashed sphinx towering in the twilight, childless old murderers for centuries with musty eyes. I am distressed, thinking of the seasons and how they pass, how I pass my very youth, the ripe sweet of my life drained off, like giant rhesus monkeys picking their skulls with ingenious cruelty, sucking out the brains. No use for beauty collapsed, with moldy breath done in, insidious weight of cankered dreams, Tiresias, withered cock, walking into the sea, shells caught in the hair, coarse waves tearing the tongue, closing the eyes. As simple an act, you float. I'm thinking about my life and how beautiful it is. How I can wake up in the morning with this, take a fresh breath, a deep breath of morning air. Thinking about, and I'm thinking about the girl that didn't want to see and live to her 23rd birthday. And I'm thinking about the bright yellow flowers. And I'm thinking about the wonders of spring. And I'm thinking about you. Well, I'm thinking about, the senior citizens that got stabbed and mutilated in Harlem. Well, I'm thinking about
I'm thinking about those kids, the teenagers, that have so much energy that they have to go to Coney Island and shoot each other. Well, I'm thinking about the soft glow of the moonlight. I'm thinking about the thunderous rain. And I'm thinking about the love that you give me. Thinking about Francis, my friend that lives on the street. Well, I'm thinking about, and I'm thinking about all those elderly people that I go to sing for in the senior citizen centers with their tubes in their throats and no one there to comfort them. Well, I'm thinking about the times that we lived through our struggle. Thinking about our struggles and joys, and I'm thinking about the love that you give me, and through it all, our troubles seem small, 'cause love grew tall in all kinds of weather.
Great way to end the first half. We're actually a little bit over half of the people, so we're going to take a 10-minute break, and then we will go on.